Case 22-3285, Timothy Ramey versus City of Niles, Ohio, et al. Oral argument, 15 minutes per side. Mr. Lute for the appellant. You may proceed.
Thank you. Good morning. May it please the court and counsel, Mel Lute for the appellant in this case. Christopher Manella is a Niles police officer. He is the only remaining defendant in the case after motion practice in the court below. He was the officer who fired three rounds in this encounter with Matthew Burroughs. Officer Manella was a police officer for over 25 years, never fired his weapon in the line of duty until that day. It was a very serious situation, a very dynamic situation, and we believe the trial court erred in its interpretation of Officer Manella's actions under the qualified immunity directive.
Raising a fact question then?
Not really, Your Honor. It's more of whether the trial court appropriately applied its analysis from the perspective of Officer Manella. The trial court's findings of fact, so to speak, make reference to issues of whether the brake lights were on, whether Officer Manella properly perceived the speed of the vehicle. And the fact is, he's standing in front of the vehicle. He had no way of knowing.
There was a genuine dispute of material fact as to whether Manella was standing in front of the decedent's vehicle.
Well, again, Your Honor, the defense takes issue with that from the standpoint of the video shows what the video shows. The trial court's analysis is if there are gaps, if there are voids in the video, then those gaps or voids are going to be interpreted in favor of the non-movement. I understand that. However, in this instance, there are no gaps in the video relative to where Officer Manella was standing. He's clearly standing in front of the vehicle when the first shot is fired. He's only to the right of the vehicle as he's moving to his left. As BCI lined up, the shots in the windshield show that they could only have occurred with the officer moving left and the vehicle moving forward.
So you're saying that the district court was incorrect in saying that there was a genuine issue of material fact as to where Officer Manella was when he shot the decedent?
That is correct, because the trial court did not apply its analysis from the Officer Manella's perspective. He is the officer on scene. He's the officer who made that split-second decision to fire on the vehicle. He was never in a position of safety. If we look at all of those other cases, Gadawa, Cass, all those other cases talk about the officer, if he's in a position of safety and he fires on a fleeing vehicle, then he doesn't get qualified immunity because he should not have fired. But there's no evidence in the trial court below that he was in a position of safety. The only evidence is that maybe the vehicle wasn't traveling as fast as Officer Manella thought it was. Maybe he wasn't as close to the vehicle as Officer Manella testified he was. These are the kinds of things that the plaintiff's expert created with his animation to try to put Officer Manella in a different context. But the fact is, Officer Manella's position is evidenced by his testimony, it's evidenced by the forensic analysis of the shots that occurred in the case, and that's his perspective. He's the shooter. Whether the brake lights were on is irrelevant.
I thought that there was a basis for a factual inference that Manella was to the side and that the decedent's car was essentially hemmed in by two police vehicles and that Manella was to the side. Am I misremembering the facts?
The plaintiff was not hemmed in by two vehicles. He managed to get out of that hemmed in position. Officer Hogan had tried to block him and he scooted past Hogan, and the only thing between basically Mr. Burroughs and his freedom was Officer Manella. He is standing in front of him, and he found himself there sort of accidentally. He did not purposely position himself there.
So if there were evidence or inferences that could be drawn from the evidence that Manella was to the side, would you then be still arguing that Manella was entitled to qualified immunity?
I think my argument would be that if the plaintiff could establish that Officer Manella was in a position of safety, that's the key analysis. A position of safety. Was he 3 feet from the car? Was he at the front passenger quarter panel? The plaintiff's expert is very careful not to specifically delineate where he is because he knows he can't, because the vehicle is moving.
But that expert report is unrebutted, right? There is not another expert report. That is the expert report in the record, right?
Well, except for the BCI analysis. BCI does a complete forensic report. That's in the record. The defense has the testimony of the officer. The defense doesn't need an expert to rebut an animator who does an after-the-fact recreation. We had the guy who was there.
What about the pictures that were taken that show him to the side?
There are no...
It all boils down to what inferences may a reasonable jury draw from that information? And to win your point, you have to say that a reasonable jury could not, based on those pictures, decide that this officer was outside the line of danger when he fired, or you could, I guess, alternatively say that the car was still moving, but the pictures show that the car was not still moving, and the other officers testify differently from Officer Minella regarding the movement and the speed of the car. Isn't that correct?
Well, there is different testimony regarding the speed, but it only comes from Officer Hogan, who, in fear for getting hit in a crossfire, ducks down into the car before the firing starts. So let's take that a little bit at a time. The first part of it is the video shows the wheels are pointed toward Officer Minella when the firing is going on. There's no dispute about that. There's no dispute about where Officer Minella is in relation to the vehicle, in that he is forward of the vehicle. There's nothing between him and the vehicle. There's no protection for him. A reasonable juror cannot attribute to Officer Minella the knowledge that the brake lights may be on, first of all. Secondly, even if the brake lights are on, that doesn't mean the vehicle is not moving forward. And thirdly, it is his perspective. He's the person whose life is on the line. He's the person who's going to get run over if he makes the wrong decision, if he hesitates. And the knowledge that he had at that time is very important. And the Sixth Circuit case law on that is pretty thick from the standpoint that the officer's knowledge is very important to inform his decision regarding reasonable conduct. He knows this guy already hit a law enforcement officer attempting to flee. He knows it because it was on the dispatch. He knows that this guy has a warrant for a violent offense. He knows that this guy, he's watched him try to maneuver to try to get free. And he's looking at him in broad daylight through the windshield, eye to eye. He's got his hands on the wheel. That's the officer's perspective that the trial court missed. Instead, they substitute an animator who has created essentially a fiction, something that is an after-the-fact judgment, which this court and the Supreme Court has warned against.
What's your best case for where qualified immunity was granted, where there's a fleeing suspect car was stationary or moving very slowly, which is shown, I think, by pictures here, and the officer was not directly in the path of that car. What's your best case?
I would cite to Burkhardt versus Ryan. It's a case that I argued here last year where a van was moved to the rear very rapidly, struck a police car that was behind it, an unoccupied police car, and two officers were sort of at diagonals, and they had to make a decision. Do we fire on the vehicle before it goes into drive and comes at us? Do we wait, or do we fire? And in that instance, it was all on video, body-worn cameras from Springfield Police Department and Blakemore Police Department. Those officers decided to fire. And
in that case, the van had backed up quickly enough and actually hit
correct.
The police car, correct?
That is correct.
But that's not what happened here, is it? The officers testified that when the other officer pulled up directly behind him, he had a controlled stop and did not hit the other police car. Isn't that correct?
That is correct relative to hitting the police car, but are right. we forgetting that he ran over, he hit a probation officer like 5 minutes earlier? I mean, he struck a law enforcement officer. We can't disregard that. That's just like for the other
part
cases.
Of what the jury would consider. My struggle with this is our case law is pretty clear about you've got to look at what happened at the actual event, not what happened earlier, because we often have this dispute of what an officer did earlier and how it plays into to what then the decedent has done. But our case law says you have to segment. You have to look at where they are at the time of this event. And that's because, of course knowledge is there. But the question is not whether the knowledge is of potential danger is a part of what the officer considered. Of course the officer considered that. But the question becomes whether because earlier, even 30 minutes earlier, he may have posed a danger, doesn't mean he can be shot to death if he is not posing that danger now. Isn't that the state of our case law?
That is. However, Officer Minella, in this instance, has to decide when he's looking at this guy through the windshield. He has a loaded gun. He's a uniformed police officer in broad daylight, and he's pointing his gun right at Burroughs, looking him in the eye and saying, "Stop the car." Burroughs does not put the car in park. He does not alter his path. He turns the wheel toward the officer. The officer starts moving. He has to decide in that instant whether he is going to take the risk of getting his legs broken or himself run over, or he's going to defend himself. And when we talk about what is clearly established, when we talk about what the officer's obligations are, both to himself and his colleagues, that decision is critical in that moment. As you've said, we have to look at what he knew. And is there any evidence in the case that the danger passed? There might be evidence in the case that the car wasn't going as fast as Officer Minella perceived. And if that's the case, well, that's negligence and that's not actionable. He still gets qualified immunity. But that's not what happened. Officer Reppy is the only person who has any video in this case. He fired 5 times on this vehicle, and he's not a defendant anymore.
He fired after your client fired, and he did not hit the decedent with his bullets, correct?
He hit the car 5 times. He did not strike the decedent,
which would be a reason for his being dismissed.
But his decision is indicative, just like in the Burkhart-Ryan case.
Could a reasonable jury have said his decision to fire was simply a response to his fellow officer already having fired? And that still leaves, doesn't it, Counselor, the question of whether his friend and fellow officer was correct in his firing.
I actually think it's the opposite. I think it shows two officers independently looking at a situation that's extremely dynamic and having to make the worst choice in their career. And they don't take it lightly, and I don't think a jury would either. But up until that point, we have to look at what informed their decision. They certainly had no indication that Officer Minella would be safe. I see my light is on. Thank you.
Thank you. Please proceed.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court, my name is Kevin Hewlett. I represent the estate of Matthew Burroughs. I'm here to make 3 arguments today. The first argument is that this court should grant the motion to dismiss because this case deals with contested factual issues. However, even if this court were to find that there is jurisdiction for this appeal, the use of force by Officer Minella was objectively unreasonable because he was not facing an imminent threat to his life. And finally, the clearly established law shows that Officer Minella's conduct was objectively unreasonable going back to as far as at least 2005. Now, looking at the first point, there are 2 different versions of facts in this case. The district court's version of facts, which held that Officer Minella was not in the path of Mr. Burroughs' vehicle, that Mr. Burroughs' vehicle was traveling 1 to 3 miles per hour, creeping, and that it appeared that Mr. Burroughs was attempting to comply with the order to stop. That's the version of facts this court must...
Okay, your opponent is telling us that Minella was right in front, directly in front, looking the driver in the eye. What facts do you point to show that there's a dispute of fact here?
Yes, Your Honor. First, the video itself shows that Officer Minella is to the side of the vehicle. But again, looking at the forensic creation of Mr. Freeze, the forensic analysis, that analysis shows that Officer Minella is not in the path of the vehicle. Now,
so the analysis itself shows Minella to the, I mean, the video itself shows Minella to the side?
It shows, it, yes, Your Honor, it shows him right at the side of the vehicle, not in front of the vehicle, to the side. And again, Mr. Freeze's analysis, the forensic analysis, also shows. And we've seen numerous cases like this in this court. I would point to a use of deadly force case, Matthews versus City of Dearborn, which was a shooting case where the officer claimed that the suspect was standing on top of him at the time that the officer used deadly force. However, a recreation and the autopsy evidence, forensic analysis, showed that there was a question of fact as to where the suspect was standing at the time of force. And in that case, this court dismissed the appeal for lack of jurisdiction. In fact, since 2020, this court has dismissed at least 10 appeals for lack of jurisdiction because the appealing party in those cases are doing what Officer Minella is doing here, attempting to relitigate factual disputes. Now, there was a motion to dismiss in this case, and the motions panel referred this motion to the merits panel. In that opinion, the motions panel said that it appears that there are questions of fact which necessarily involve the legal arguments. That was giving Officer Minella an opportunity to tailor his arguments to the appropriate version of facts, the version of facts that must be used for purposes of appeal. However, he chose not to do so. In fact, I would point this court to page 5 of Officer Minella's reply brief, and I'm using the numbers at the top of the page, not the bottom of the page. But on page 5, he has a section that's titled Statement of Undisputed Facts. And the first sentence in that section states that the district court issued its opinion upon Appellee's version of the facts, which constitute a misrepresentation of what occurred on January 2, 2019, as well as upon alleged facts that Officer Minella had no way of knowing at the time of the incident. Now, that is a wholesale rejection of the district court's version of the facts. In Mr. Burrow's brief on page 30, again using the numbers at the top, we've pointed numerous instances in Officer Minella's principal brief where he is disputing factual issues. Because there are these critical issues of factual dispute, this court should dismiss this appeal. But even if the court were to accept jurisdiction and look at this case on the merits, Officer Minella's use of force was objectively unreasonable.
Does the record show in any way where the bullets that killed the decedent came into the decedent's vehicle? In other words, are there bullet holes in the front windshield or are they on the side? And I'm only asking what the record shows.
Yes, Your Honor. The record shows that the bullets entered the front windshield. But that does not mean that Officer Minella is necessarily in the path of Mr. Burroughs' vehicle, because someone can be standing to the side and shooting into the vehicle and going through the windshield. For instance, by that door over there, if the door were to shoot towards me, if there were to be shots coming from that door, it would go through the front windshield of my vehicle. But that does not mean that my vehicle is in the path of the door, or the door is in the path of my vehicle. But, Your Honor.
Logically, I don't understand that.
I'm sorry?
I don't understand logically. I would think if the bullet goes straight through the front windshield.
Oh, it did not go straight through the
front. It didn't go straight through.
It went through the windshield, but not straight through it.
I see.
Does Freeze, I've forgotten if his report actually includes an angle of the shot in it as they came through the windshield. Is that analysis in it?
Yes, Your Honor, I believe his report does incorporate that analysis, which is based on the BCI.
The angle analysis of where he's standing?
Yes, the report does place where he's standing, Your Honor. And in the
use and the report places him to, places Minella to the side, correct?
Yes, it places him not in the path of the vehicle, yes, Your Honor. And in use of deadly force cases, while we traditionally look to the Graham factors, one Graham factor is generally dispositive, and that's the imminency of threat. We have to look at the time of the use of force, is there an imminent threat to the officer using force, to another officer on the scene, to civilians on the scene? And in this case, there is no imminent threat. And I understand that Officer Minella has made arguments that, well, there were predicate incidents before the shooting that suggested a willingness to resist arrest or risk of harm, but...
And he would have a right to consider that, wouldn't he? Officer Minella would have a right to consider what he knows about the person he's facing.
Yes, Your Honor, he does have the right to consider that. However, you still have to look at the time. For instance, in Godala versus Byrd, which is a Sixth Circuit decision, there was a contact between an officer and the vehicle 2 seconds before the shooting, but the court still found that the use of force there was objectively unreasonable because even though there was that prior contact, at the time of the shooting, the use of force was unreasonable because there was no imminent threat to anyone.
One question on the jurisdictional issue. Our law also authorizes us to not consider disputes of fact that are not dispositive on legal issues and to take a case and rule on legal issues. Are there any legal issues in this case that you think can be addressed under our standards?
No, Your Honor, because of the entire wholesale rejection of the facts in this case, there's essentially every critical fact is disputed. And because of that, that infects the legal arguments, even to whether there's clearly established law. And courts have dismissed appeals because appealing parties have done exactly what Officer Minella has done, where they've had a wholesale rejection of the facts of the case. Now, I would also like to point this court to the case of Smith versus Cupp, which is a 2005 case. And in that case, the car was pointed in the general direction of the officer that used force. However, the court found that there was a disputed fact there as to the exact position of the officer, whether the officer was in the path of the vehicle, and therefore the use of force was unreasonable. And I would also like to draw out a point that I feel may be coming. In the district court's opinion, that court noted that it was a close call. But in Smith versus Cupp, this court said that it was also a close call, and therefore, because there were these disputed factual issues, a jury needed to resolve that. And while there was the statement at the district court that this was a close call, our reading of that is that it was a close call of which version of facts to credit. Because if we look at the two sets of facts, they are diametrically opposed.
You know, isn't this case of virtually an all fours with this Gazala versus Byrd? If I'm remembering that case, the decedent was driving a car in a parking lot, and the there was a factual dispute as to whether the officer was in front of the car to the side of the car, and it was determined that because of the disagreement factually between the parties that the case would proceed. If I'm remembering the facts of that case, I believe I was on the panel out of that case out of Covington, Kentucky. Isn't that case pretty much on all fours with this one?
Yes, Your Honor. Godala versus Byrd is very similar to this case, where there's a question over whether the officer is in the path of the vehicle and therefore posing there's an imminent threat to the officer. And that
that's exactly the issue in the case I'm making reference to.
Exactly, Your Honor. Yes, that's what I'm saying. That is the same dispute that we have in this case. But I would also point out that this case is also similar to Hermes versus City of Southfield, where there was a dispute over the position of the officer at the time of use of force. And in that case, the court held that the vehicle was going 5 to 10 miles per hour. And the court held, because of that, there was also a question of fact as based on the imminence of the threat because the vehicle is moving at a slower rate of speed. Here, we're not even going 5 to 10 miles per hour. We're going 1 to 3 miles per hour.
The 1 to 3 miles is based on what?
That's based on Mr. Free's forensic analysis, Your Honor.
Okay. So really, the case comes down to the question, where was the officer standing when he decided to shoot and shot?
No, Your Honor. That is a factual issue. It is not the dispositive factual issue, however, because I would again point to the case of Smith versus Cupp, where in that case, the car was admittedly pointed in the general direction, not necessarily in the path, but pointed in the general direction. And the court there still said that it was an unreasonable use of force based on the set of facts that the court must review for purposes of appeal.
Is that because the officer is required to step aside to avoid shooting the driver?
Well, Your Honor, Officer Manella did testify that if a car is moving slow enough that it's reasonable for an officer to move out of the way, that the officer should do so. But that's not really the analysis that the court generally gets into in looking at these cases. It's looking at where the officer was at the time of the shooting, the rate of speed at which the vehicle is moving, and what the officer has seen in the instances leading up to the shooting. Because we have instances where the court has held that it's an impermissible use of force because the officer's view of the situation would show that right before the shooting, it appeared that the suspect was attempting to not hit other vehicles, much like when Mr. Burroughs came into this apartment complex, he specifically avoided Officer Hogan's vehicle. He performed a controlled stop. So that fact is also relevant. And a general argument that opposing counsel has made is the idea of the subjective understanding of Officer Manella at the time. But that's not the analysis this court uses in determining whether a use of force is unreasonable. The analysis is still objective. I would point this court to Boudreaux versus Mattingly, which is a 2007 decision. And in that case, the court noted that Mattingly, the officer, was flustered and nervous. The court said it too may have been flustered and nervous in that situation, but it noted the legal standard is objective. You have to look at objectively what a reasonable officer should have done in the situation, not subjectively what the officer did. As my time is nearing expiration, I would like to address the clearly established law analysis. Now, going back to 2005, Smith versus Cupp, that would have put Officer Manella on notice that the use of force was unreasonable, as would Goodall versus Byrd, a 2015 decision. Kirby versus Duva, a 2008 decision, would likewise put Officer Manella on notice that his use of force was unreasonable. In that case, Mr. Kirby had tried to flee. He had made contact with a driver, and an officer, Mr. Duva, shot Kirby. He claimed that the truck was speeding at him. However, like in this case, forensic analysis showed that the truck was not speeding at him, and therefore it was unreasonable for the use of force. And even looking at the idea of clearly established law as a general principle, the facts of the case for purposes of this appeal are that Mr. Burroughs was traveling at 1 to 3 miles per hour. That Officer Hogan testified that he had slowed down to a great degree and was creeping forward, and that Officer Manella was not in the path of the vehicle. These points all led to the district court's overall conclusion that it appeared that Mr. Burroughs was attempting to abandon his flight. Your Honor, may I have a few more seconds to summarize?
Yes.
Thank you, Your Honor. And we have seen cases where when it appears that the suspect is attempting to comply with an order, they have to be given that opportunity to do so, and that is critical for the analysis here. And for all these reasons, and principally because there's a material dispute of numerous factual issues, we would ask that this court dismiss this appeal, but if not, we would also ask that this court affirm the district court's ruling. Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you.
I would just note that actually the trial court said it's an extremely close call, and I simply think that they made the wrong call. It was extremely close, and they chose the wrong way. The plaintiff, the appellee, cites to Smith versus Cupp, and that is an interesting cite because in that case, the court concludes that a driver who appears ready to drive into an officer with his car, and demonstrates multiple times he's willing to do that, the officer can shoot. And they must in that instance if their lives are in danger. And in the Smith case, you have a officer shooting from the driver's side. okay, in various other cases, you have officers who are shooting from the side of the vehicle. In the Smith case, the hood passes the officer before he fires. In our case, the officer fires directly into the windshield. And a question was asked whether he was to the side. If you look in the video, which I watched five times last night, by the time Reppy gets up there and has finished firing, yes, Officer Minella has cleared the vehicle by then because he is shooting from the center of the hood and moving to his left as the vehicle is moving forward. That's why you have three stitched bullet holes in the windshield directly in front of the driver's position. Not coming from the side, it is directly in front of Matthew Burroughs. It goes right into his chest. Sorry to get graphic about it, but that's what the BCI concluded. That's how they cleared the officers. They found that they did an appropriate use of force under the circumstances. And they're very, very meticulous in their review. And they're very good at ballistics. They're very good at tracking trajectory.
Why isn't this like Kirby versus Duvon, I think it's, or Duva? Why isn't this a Kirby versus Duva case where the defendant officer said there was a quick-moving vehicle and they were in its path, but the plaintiff produced evidence that the vehicle had been moving slowly and that the officers were not at risk of being hit at that time? And qualified immunity was denied in that case.
I think this is different because in Kirby, they have a set of facts that are quite different than we have leading up to the event, and then what informs the officer's perception at that time. Officer Minella's perception at that time, he's standing directly in front of the car. He has the option at that point to either protect himself with his weapon or take the risk that Matthew Burroughs won't kill him. And the immediacy was not there in the Kirby case. That whole situation was unfolding at a much slower pace. This was a very rapidly evolving situation. And it's easy for us to say, based on this forensic analysis from this guy in California with his animation, 3 to 5 miles an hour. Who's going to stand in front of a car and take the risk? Is it 3 to 5 miles an hour, or is it more like 10 to 12 miles an hour that Officer Minella perceived? If he's wrong in his perception of the speed of the car, is that a reason to put him in front of a jury and open this case up when qualified immunity should be granted to him? That's the issue. And we simply suggest that the trial court misapplied the law of the Sixth Circuit. They should have looked at it from an objectively reasonable perspective from Officer Manella's standpoint, instead of, as the trial court indicated, looking at this animation, which looked at it from numerous possible angles. Well, he didn't have that luxury. And we know from the Cunningham case, he shouldn't be looked at, the fact shouldn't be looked at it in a way that is unfair to the officer who does not have the luxury of looking at this from multiple angles in the moment when he's trying to decide whether he lives or dies.
Does the record indicate why your client did not have his body camera on?
I mean, I know the reason, and I think it's in the record. Minella gets to the apartment complex first, and his intent is to go up to Matthew Burroughs' apartment and inform his girlfriend so she can get out of there because they fear he might be heading back there, and they want her to get out to protect her. So he does not activate his body camera because he thinks he's just going up to knock on the door. And so as he...
That's in the record that,
yes,
that he makes a statement as to
right.
why he did not.
And he actually, unfortunately, he should have turned it on, and he did not.
Thank you for your response, and the case will be submitted. Thank you both for your argument.
Thank you.